Welcome to The Greatest, a production of iHeartRadio. Hi, and welcome to another episode of The Greatest. I'm Megan Gailey, joined by my husband and co-host and fellow American.
Fellow American. Finally, it feels good to say that.
CJ Toledano.
Fellow Filipino American.
And I'm proud to be CJ's wife.
Well, and I'm very proud to be your husband. Usually, and we did this a little bit in the beginning here, we usually, like, man, the pandemic and everything has been so bad that whenever we hop on a Zoom, before we even officially start the show, we, like, recap what bad is happening in the world. And I was like, man, we're not gonna have to do that this time. We did have a little bit, but I do want to start celebratory here.
But we did it in a sense of, look at this bad shit. Even that can't ruin
That's
my mood.
That's what humans were
Even
just
that
so...
can't bring me down.
Yeah.
And part of the good mood is our wonderful guest that's here today.
Yes.
I mean, in the sports world, a podcasting legend, host of All Fantasy Everything, which has the nicest fans,
yeah,
and also head writer of The Late Late Show with James Corden. Please welcome Ian Carmel.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
It's what awesome to have you.
Thank you.
How are you doing?
I'm wonderful, man. I mean, rest in peace, Alex Trebek, of course, an absolute legend. Outside of that, though, man, I'm in a great mood. I plucked some persimmons off a tree in my backyard. I fucked them up with some blue cheese this morning and, made an amazing breakfast. It's beautiful. Joe Biden's president, which, you know, it's not all good news. My guy lost, but we're going to... No, I'm joking. I'm not...
I was like, where is this going?
I guess you never know with people. That's the whole thing. No, I despise his fucking guts. And I'm so glad this whole thing has been so...
Yeah.
It's been just a lovely couple of days, and it rained in LA.
I know. So it's just so the listeners have the temperature of the room. It's Sunday, 2:15 Pacific time. So we have all now had the news of Joe Biden winning for over 24 hours. CJ and I, we were like, it was in the morning. We woke up, we saw the news, so exciting. And then you start seeing all of this stuff out of like New York and DC. And gosh, I mean, we've been trying to find the celebrations when it was Dodgers, Lakers, and it felt like that.
Yeah.
It was like, where we go? So we got in CJ's cube. Oh, YG was blaring out of the busted cube speakers, fuck Donald Trump. And we made our own little parade on the northeast side of LA. Ian, what did you do?
Well, I live in Atwater Village. So I woke up and like, you heard about these stories where like people were partying on the streets of Silver Lake and West Hollywood. People were like hanging out of buildings. And my neighborhood is like full of kind of like old people who've lived in LA for like a very long time. So it was very... People were like smiling and waving to each other on the parking lot, but it was not a party atmosphere, not because they weren't happy, but just because a party atmosphere, I think in Atwater Village means like in bed by 8.
Yeah, kind of thing. It's like a farmer's market where all the fruit looks good.
Everything was so ripe. The bougainvillea bushes were in full bloom. it was, but like, Just a beautiful day. I hung out with my girlfriend and we just had like a beautiful day and then had a couple friends over in the backyard for like a social distance champagne pop and everything. Just a lovely day in a year that has not had enough lovely days. It was very nice.
Listen, and I didn't want to bring it up, but you know, Lakers jumpstarted it for us. And then, I wanted to give you this opportunity, but it's like the celebrating has been really weird, but it is like, hopefully this is some momentum to get out of this year, you know?
In Los Angeles, especially, it was like, with the Lakers and the Dodgers and then just like the progressive sweeps not sweeps because there were some measures that absolutely should have passed that didn't, but with a lot of with Jackie Lacey getting voted out and Nithya Raman getting like voted in, like pretty cool things happening in LA, like at a local level, in addition to the national news. So, yeah, good year for LA, you know, happening despite everything terrible that's happening.
Well, and I keep I guess it's not a warning because it's a positive thing. I keep telling people, like, the rest of the country is having to go indoors at their own peril, unfortunately. Yeah. We are happily outside. I mean, I did a show last night and it was 60 and there were heaters. I mean, like, yeah. Even if it's teetering on maybe this is too cold, we will overdress, overheat ourselves. Like, we are not going to have to go inside. And so I keep trying to like make people come here. Like, I'm like, come here, quarantine, and then you can be in my backyard. And they're like, I'm not going to do that. But that's like, that's what I'm trying to pitch to people.
Absolutely. It would be, how long did it take for your cold resistance to wear off? Because mine is fully gone.
I am such a little bitch. And like, I'm disappointed in myself because it did rain yesterday, and rain I'm still good with. Like, yeah. The booker of the show was like, hey, are you still good? I go, I know 5 people whose houses were torn down by tornadoes. Like, I'm good to go if it's raining. But then I had a winter hat on and I'm like, yeah. My parents are from Niagara Falls, New York. Like, they would be mortified by my just thin blood I have now.
I used to go to school in a shorts and t-shirt every single day, no matter what was happening in Portland, Oregon. It could be 43 and like torrential downpours, which was like most of the winter. And I'd still be like in a big dog t-shirt, you know, dogs behaving badly sitcom, like parody t-shirt and bum equipment shorts, having the time of my life. And last night I slept in a sweater and a hoodie.
It just is. And you're the same as me. Like, you're a, like, getting some fits off type of guy, you know, yes. Sneakers. And so like, I have a whole arsenal of jackets to get out there, but it is strange of like, I can't, there is no like thing to go to get those fits off in this. So I'm like, it's a little bit of a tempered down version of like happiness for jacket weather is back here in LA.
It's definitely a mixed blessing. It's like, that's the thing with sneakers right now is like, I have all these pairs that I want to wear. Cause like I've slowed down buying them a little bit, but not as much as like I should have given that there's nowhere to wear them. But like, I don't want to wear like a grail pair of sneakers to go to Gelson's for 7 minutes.
Yeah.
You know,
I have done that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, and I know, and I'm not going to shut Megan out of this, but I just want to be like, you've been like an OG dunk guy, and like now dunks are back. And so in production, so I have been thinking about you of like, fuck, I mean, are you buying these and are you able to get, you know, go out and show them off?
I still do buy like dunks every now and then, but like I passed up on those kind of like the knockoff Paris dunks almost. Yeah. I forget what they were called, but the ones that kind of looked like that. And then they're hard to get now. I used to love like snagging them. I remember I got like my Black Pigeon dunks for like $200 aftermarket.
Yeah.
That's what, you know, because they sell for what, like 120 or whatever, like when they go on sale. So like not that much, but I haven't really been wearing them now because they're so like my Purple Lobsters are almost like,
Megan's like, you guys are insane.
Well, Purple Lobster like, sounds cute.
They're cute little lobsters. They're cute little shoes with little rubber bands you can put on the... But they're so expensive now that I'm like, I got to really pick and choose when and where I wear these.
Exactly.
And then it's like, are both of you just creating a separate Instagram account that's just photos of your shoes? I mean, that's
Definitely thought about it.
That's the next safe step.
I have a room that's just shoes now. Yeah. And an Instagram account can't be fun. The thing about it is it seems like maybe it could be a way to get free shoes if you get a popular enough like shoe Instagram account.
Whenever I try to apply any amount of just pressure to CJ's purchasing habits, he comes back at me with, yeah, but this helps my career. And it's like, I don't even know.
Listen,
if you were to create the diagram, I would love to see
that
it.
That was a lie in the beginning. And then it actually kind of helped. It kind of worked. It
all feeds into itself. Having the cool sneakers feeds into the sports stuff, feeds into the culture stuff, into the sneakers. It is weirdly like a bit like once you become like, oh no, that guy's like a legit sneakerhead. It does like grant you entree into certain like communities or at least an air of validation, which is very silly, but it does happen.
But
it does
in happen. LA is more valuable than currency in some ways.
Yeah. Well, in a lot of ways, it's more stable than currency. Like if you just bought a pair of Off-Whites 2 years ago, that thing has gone up like better than any stock in America right now.
What I'm trying to say is we need to start coming out with signature microphones for stand-up.
Yeah.
And that'll show that we're like, you know, we'll buy new microphones.
I would never. There's not even anything in my life. Cause like sometimes I try to be like, okay, well, I love Bravo or I like love the Colts, but it doesn't even come close to CJ and Sneakers. There's nothing. Maybe my nieces. The love like is actual the same. Human beings.
Yeah, a new niece is like new.
Those are a limited drop. Yeah.
They are.
Dead stock nieces. I know it's sick for me too. There's not a day that I don't like look at GOAT, like the app, just to like, it soothes me now. It's very weird. And I'll just go like, look at my sneakers sometimes. Speaking of dunks, I bought like a pair. It's crazy how valuable they've got. I bought a pair of just like these Halloween trick or treat dunks last year. They were ugly. And I was like, I'll wear these next Halloween. I didn't because where would I have worn them? And like, now those are like $600. It like seems like a weird complaint, but like I kind of wish they would stop doing that. So I wouldn't feel so bad about wearing these shoes.
We'll never not feel bad because we're like, you know, the thing is our income does come from comedy and like from the years of like working on material. And then you're like, yeah, no, these shoes are an investment. But really we're like, we like the way they look and we're going to wear them. But you know,
I did see sneakerhead Will Miles. He said, if Biden wins, I'll give away. How many pairs was it?
I don't know. Five.
I thought it was 10.
I gave away a bunch.
Five. Wow. Where do you give them away? Did you like donate them?
Yeah. Sometimes I will just straight up go to a Goodwill and just it really is just like I'll just go. I could put these on eBay and all this other stuff, but it's just like, just get, you know, to Goodwill. And there are some people who are like specializing in taking like sneakers and distributing them to like the youth and to like men's leagues before the pandemic and all that stuff. So I can give you some names.
Oh, you got to put me in touch with those people. Yeah. Because I got a bunch of 13s I got to get rid of.
Yeah.
I mean, we ordered so much food last night. We got Taco Bell, McDonald's, Pizza Hut, and Domino's. We celebrated like Trump voters, but we got so much food that we had to donate our food. CJ had to like make a bag of Crunchwrap Supreme, Cheesy Gordita Crunches, Chicken McNuggets, like a bag full of food and bring it up the street where there's an encampment. Cause I was like, we have to, this is.
Yeah, it's absurd.
That was a beautiful night for them too.
We need everybody to celebrate, you know? Like I can't throw nuggets out when Biden wins.
You also can't put those in the fridge.
No.
You can't throw them.
No. And we have an air fryer, but there's just some things that an air fryer can't fix. You know, it's like a marriage. It's like, it'll help, but it's not going to fix it. Okay, today's
a Band-Aid, but it's not stitches.
No, exactly.
Wait, before we move on, but I saw your tweet last night. You were saying, because Biden, when you were going to, what was it, a spicy McChicken finally? Yeah. Was there something you tried for the first time?
I said I was going to get a spicy McChicken and a Cheesy Gordita Crunch. Cheesy Gordita Crunch is like, it used to be Crunchwrap Supreme. Now it's Cheesy Gordita Crunch. I'm actually transitioning into Soft Taco Supremes. Oh my God, those are so good. So that's like I go in waves with Taco Bell kind of. But I guess they're not doing the spicy chicken nuggets or spicy McChickens anymore.
But wait, they're not doing the spicy McChicken. I feel like that came and went in like a week.
And the thing is, they got us hooked and then they took it away. They took it away.
Why?
I know, it's fucked up.
That always makes me feel like whatever ingredient they were using was some sort of byproduct that they found at the McDonald's plant. Yeah. They were like, it turns out that if we add this to chicken, it like makes it spicy. But then we ran out because.
Well, so what happened? I have a weird theory with Popeyes. I've seen it a little bit around, but like people are saying, you know, that early Popeyes drop obviously was very good in our opinion. And then, you know, people wanted it, it became this hyped up thing. And then it did come back in mass quantities. And it's
not as
standard.
Good.
It's for like, you know.
It's just not as good. Like the first ones. And you see this, like I love Milk Bar. And a Milk Bar used to just be in New York. And there were like two locations. And now it's everywhere. You can buy it at Whole Foods. And it's like, okay, well, the Whole Foods Milk Bar is not going to be anywhere near as good as like the 54th Street original Milk Bar that ever, it just gets diluted.
That like some baker was actually like rolling out earlier that morning. The crack pie is never going to be as good as what if you like buy it. Yeah, like at a Whole Foods that's been sitting there for a week.
But I guess with McDonald's, you're like, y'all pretty consistent. You know?
That's the whole thing. It's you could be in like in Kuala Lumpur or Cleveland and it's going to be the same spicy McChicken. But like, oh, that's so disappointing. I was on my next cheat day. I was going to go get a spicy McChicken because in my opinion, a top three, one of the greatest. fast food sandwiches.
Wow. It's a McChicken. Yeah.
And make sure, because that might have just been like our local McDonald's. And it's funny to say our local McDonald's. So I would make sure.
We shop local at McDonald's. CJ and I did. We're not going to get into it. We've moved past it. We did get into a bit of a lover's quarrel about how the McChickens were ordered last night.
Oh, a spat. What was the?
I got on plane because I was like, plane? If you want, because we got a bunch of shit. So I got on plane. I eat on plane. And I was like, yeah, we could just add if there's any other additional stuff.
He said you can just add. And then I go, okay, but the way that you, like the warmth of the mayonnaise and the limpness of the lettuce, you can't add. Like,
no, that's part of it.
That's a magician at McDonald's.
Yes.
And he heard me out. We agreed to disagree. But ketchup and mustard, you can add, but warm mayonnaise, you can't add.
It's part of the terroir. It's a specific mayonnaise that is like continuous cooking.
I understand. But on the one angle of the conversation is my white wife was mad that mayonnaise wasn't on her sandwich.
Yeah.
One angle that I could win on.
Okay.
That's how I could win this argument. But
all right. I guess it's all framing of the story. I was about to be like, I'm from a small market and now everybody knows. So today I'm really excited for this because this is near and dear to my heart. I'm sure it's near and dear to Ian's, maybe a little less so CJ's because he picks teams.
No, I'm
going to
get exposed again on how much of a front runner I am.
Today we are doing greatest small market athletes. And CJ and I were having a bit of a discussion. Like he'd be like, is this a small market? And so, Ian, what do you think constitutes a small market?
That's a great question. I guess it's almost that old, like that Supreme Court definition of art. I don't know how to define it, but I know it when I see it.
Right.
Like, I know what a small market feels like. Cause there are like, for example, not to give anything away, but like San Diego is not necessarily like a small city,
right? Mm-hmm.
But I do think of it as a small market, and maybe it's its proximity to Los Angeles, which is like a massive metropolis, you know, Portland, of course, is a small market. Seattle is not like a big city.
I think of it as like a kind of small.
You think of it as a small market?
I have a Seattle person on here and I was like, do you think of Seattle as small? But this is also because you were raised in the Pacific Northwest. I was raised in the Midwest that I didn't know. This person introduced me to Seattle, exposed me to it.
You're picking Frasier, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm actually picking Niall. But is that his name? Niles. I don't even know. Detroit is on the edge for me.
Yeah.
But I grew
smaller
up
by the day.
I grew up knowing what Detroit was. Yeah. But if you grew up not in the Midwest, you may not know what Detroit is.
You don't. But it's weird to think of a four-team market as like a small market.
Exactly. Yeah. Right.
But Detroit is not a huge city.
It's big enough to win Michigan. But
part of me qualifies this as, did the athlete ring chase, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like stayed on his one team that doesn't have a bunch of championships from super teams. So like I say no real restrictions or barriers on here. Like part of the fun and, you know, on your show, you do this a lot too, is just like your reasoning behind your pick will constitute whether that's, you know, fits in the category, I think.
Oh yeah. It's the mayonnaise that you put on the McChicken that matters.
Yes. And it was very hard for me to not pick three Indianapolis athletes, but I did not.
But there's a couple good ones.
You come from a small market has like some truly legendary small market athletes.
And Indy is like when you know what you see, you go, oh, that's a small market. But we do have two major teams and then this massive race. Like it's 500,000 people. You know, it's not a big city.
It's not, but the athletes who played there stayed there in like a major way, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah, so this is going to be fun. I'm very excited.
Okay.
Should we go right into it? Yeah.
You lead us off with your number three pick for greatest small market athlete.
All right. So my number three pick for greatest small market athlete, and I have to, before I get into this, I have to qualify just for all three of my picks. I went with greatness at large rather than like proximity to my heart, because if I went with proximity to my heart, I would pick three Trailblazers. I feel like I can't do that.
Right.
But with my first pick, I'm going to go about 100 miles to the south of where we are now. I'm going down to San Diego, California. And I'm taking a player who didn't spend his whole career there, but spent enough of it in that city that I think he definitely counts as a small market icon. 12-time Pro Bowler, 8-time All-Pro, first team, twice second team, NFL Defensive Player of the Year, okay, NFL Man of the Year.
Phew.
Taking Philip Rivers.
No, that's, I was like, what's happening? What's happening? This is what my punishment is.
USC legend, California legend. I'm taking Junior Seau.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Yes.
Yeah.
Legend.
A person who defines San Diego.
Defines San Diego, defines the San Diego Chargers. Played mm-hmm. there, played in San Diego concurrently with another amazing small market athlete who I won't mention right now in case someone wants to take him. But like, yeah, he was the definition. In the NFL, Portland never had like an NFL football team. And I, by default, did not like the Seahawks. There are some kids in Portland who like love the Seahawks, especially now that they're kind of cool. But like when I was growing up, it was like, Curtis Martin, was he the running back?
Curtis Martin.
They felt very expansion teamy, you know, like a Raptors or like, yeah, I don't know what you mean.
I did not fuck with the Seahawks when I was growing up. So I was a mercenary in whatever team I liked. The kid across the cul-de-sac was a big Cowboys fan. So I rooted for the Buffalo Bills.
Great. Just to, Thank God.
Self-flagellate, I guess. But they were really fun. But the person I always liked, and especially when I started playing football and was like always on the defensive side, never a linebacker, always a defensive tackle. But I just fucking loved Junior Seau. He was so cool. He was such a good player. He was like intimidating, but like everybody seemed to like him and just like was an amazing football player for the whole time I was there. And like, it met such a tragic end with, you know, with this knowing something was wrong with his brain from the way he played football and everything. But just in terms of like, even when he went to New England was cool because he was like this like old dude and kind of like an Expendables like movie idea of football where he went to the Patriots and was all old. But like, in San Diego, just like dominant and cool and classy and like defined the city.
And I don't know much about NFL history or as much as, you know, some of our listeners, but he to me was kind of like those foundational Pacific Islander, like, you know, big guy, linebacker, like Paul Amalu, like all those other guys. And so, and when you think 80s, 90s NFL players, those are like, he's iconic in the way he looked and the way he played and like his like stats and all that. So
he was like a trailblazer for sure. It's also, it's so interesting to pick a defensive player because it's a lot harder as a defensive player to make your mark on a team or a city. I mean, especially in football, it's a offense driven league. And so for someone to be, I mean, he's not on my list because I don't like him, but Ray Lewis, it's also you were in Baltimore. I don't even really, I know the quarterbacks were mediocre, but it was like, he was the quarterback, basically. He was
their quarterback. Yeah, exactly. He was the face of the franchise, which almost ties into what, like how small markets kind of feel about themselves oftentimes. Even a place like San Diego, which is actually very blue collar and like, you know, the military is the biggest thing there and everything. But like, that's kind of like the way small market, like we're scrappy, we're like underdogs, you know what I mean? We're succeeding despite, you know, the lack of our size. And like that almost like a linebacker or something like that, that kind of identity, you know, being gritty, you know, like that's like the identity of a small town. And it's kind of cool when a defensive player then like encapsulates what that small town is about.
Great pick.
Great pick.
Thank you. Yeah.
You want to go or you want me to?
I'll go.
Okay.
So I'm going to go, I always try not to go basketball in the beginning because everyone's like, CJ only talks about basketball in this podcast. but I'm going to go Vince Carter.
Oh, yeah.
And again, it's like he, in the tail end of his career, he ended up playing for a ton of small market teams. And you're like, this is a guy who deserved to ring chase a little bit. And again, I think part of this is like small market almost means kind of like loyal for like kind of like wanting to be a part of the underdog. And like Vince Carter, from highlights to roles on teams he's played, because he's played every role, I feel like.
He's been everybody.
You know, he's been the number one. He's been, you know, on the cold teams.
Coming off the bench.
Yeah. And so in Vince Carter, I just, in the way he went out, or like, you know, because he had to play his last game unknowingly, which is, we're going to talk about this for years, how we couldn't, like 2020 had to end Vince Carter's career without a celebration.
We have to give him that, like, one last game, 10-day contract, comes back and like it's like a proper goodbye, yeah, like kind of thing. He, if anybody deserves that, it's Vince Carter.
And what team would you do that with, you know?
I don't know. I don't know. Does Toronto?
I think the Raptors. Right? They don't like him anymore?
No, I don't think they hate him anymore.
Oh, yeah. No, I think it's Toronto. I mean, basketball is going to cease to have stars in small markets. And so that's something like that makes me really sad, because you want in 10 years, oh, we picked Giannis and he stayed and it worked there. But I don't think that's what's going to happen. And in the NFL and baseball, it's just they just have less power and there's less flash. I mean, it's just more team based. And so I think it happens. But with basketball, you really do. I don't know if the Pacers will ever have a big superstar.
I know what you mean. I mean, and like perhaps we'll talk about them later, but like the Blazers, we're like, it's absurd that Damian Lillard is still a Blazer.
It's
crazy. You know what I mean? Like, they've been competitive his whole time. Well, not his whole time, but most of the time he's been like in Portland. But like, to go back to Giannis, I don't know many people who think that he stays, let alone his whole career, but even this next contract. It seems almost like fait accompli that he's already gone. Like he's in Miami, you know, like that kind of thing.
Really, the conversation is, where is he going? Miami or the Lakers?
Or the Lakers, Golden State. Are they going to get him to bridge the gap? Yeah, nobody's.
It's not, is he going to stay? It's where is he going?
Well, and like Oakland and San Francisco, they don't have a lot of people, but I think of them as big markets because they're in California and they attract big talent. So it's
and the Bay is just huge. Yeah. The Bay is like San Francisco, right, or Oakland themselves may not be, but like that's like
there's
the
a lot of people,
of
right?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, gosh, I really
don't talk about Vince Carter. Vince, just to frost the cake a little bit more. I mean, like one of the, if not the best basketball player of all time, nobody thinks that. But nobody's been more exciting in individual moments, like. There's five players where when they're like on a fast break with no defenders in front of them, you instinctively stand up. Your brain plays no part of it. Your body just like stands up. LeBron, of course. Giannis is one of them now. But like Vince Carter on a breakaway, he's going to do something fucking silly.
Yeah.
He's going to do something stupid that you haven't seen before in a game, maybe even a dunk contest. And like, The what was it? The 2002? What was the dunk contest?
I think 2000, right?
2000, maybe 2000. Yeah. One of the greatest moments in NBA history. The dunk over Friedrich Weiss, where he didn't even come to the NBA after that. Just like...
and that wasn't even his decision. That was the basketball gods going, you're not allowed to move up another level.
Just be French and seven feet tall in Europe. That's a good life. You're going to have a good life over here. Don't go to New York.
And that's a whole other episode. It's like, when you talk about types of dunkers, there's power and there's like creativity. Again, he had both. It was like to do a windmill and a double pump and all that. And it was still like the dunk was always going to be a hard finish.
He was a comic of basketball players. Because you, but also like a crowd favorite. You see him at those dunk contests and you see Shaq in a jacket that must have required the sacrifice of 7 to 8 cows. Like standing up and like he can't believe it. And he's Shaq. He's had basketball hoops fall on top of him. Yeah. And even he can't believe what like he's seeing. Vince Carter. Great. I love. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So my number three, I've gone back and forth between two baseball players. So one will be in my honorable mention. So my number three is Ken Griffey Jr.
Oh, yeah.
He almost, like, as a kid, we didn't have baseball in Indy. And so people would be Cubs fans or Reds fans, but then you would see people in Griffey stuff everywhere. And it was Seattle. I've never even been to Seattle still, and I would love to go, but he defined that whole city to me. So he was on the Mariners for 10 years. And then after that, he went to the Cincinnati Reds. I mean, because I didn't want to pick a bunch of people that like LeBron to me, it's like, yes, he's from Akron, gave it to them, but then left. So I don't think of him as small market.
No.
But Ken Griffey, it's like he was in a small market and then he went to an even smaller market that's even less desirable and has worse weather.
Yeah.
And that was, I mean, he played 22 seasons and only like one of them was in Chicago. And the rest of it was, in places whose population wouldn't even add up to equal Chicago.
No,
and
he went home.
A star.
He was from Cincinnati, right?
Yeah. Or no, yeah. he's from Pennsylvania.
Oh, Pennsylvania. Okay, okay.
But yeah, he just was a star. It seems like he put the Mariners on the map. I don't know if I could name another Mariner. He just kind of put baseball and like really like talent, like black guys playing baseball. I feel like that's like less and less, you see that less and less now. And he was a like black baseball superstar.
Yeah, he really was. Even my hating heart, hating everything about Seattle, could not resist the lure of those Ken Griffey Jr. teams.
Yeah. They were the backwards '90s Bulls of baseball, or he was the '90s Bulls of baseball, where it's like,
he was.
You know nothing about, like, you don't need to know anything other than that he's fucking cool and winning, you know, and they're like so good.
Necklace out, hat backwards, chewing gum, the most aesthetically pleasing swing of all time.
And like hot and cool, 13-time All-Star, 630 home runs, which is seventh in MLB history. And then also a 10-time Gold Glove winner for center field. I mean, he's got a Mookie vibe. It's like, I'm going to hit and I'm going to play incredible defense. And that's just what I'm about. And I'm going to have a cool-ass gold chain.
Cool. I think like one earring some of the time. Yeah. Or just like, he was just so fucking cool. Baseball was cool because he was playing it. Like Mookie's cool, you know what I mean? And like baseball, the Dodgers
are
cool.
Yeah,
but baseball doesn't feel cool. But baseball felt cool, and like those black superstars, it was a good era because you had like Barry Larkin, you had other people who I won't mention because they're different kinds of black superstars too. But like, who were a lot of small market ones in the '90s. But fuck, Griffey was so rad. Those teams were cool too. And his dad was on that.
I know.
Yeah.
He played with his dad. That's like amazing. And you have like, God, some of those like Jay Buhner you had and like Joey Cora. They were just like rad Mariners teams, man. They were so fun. And they were turquoise back when turquoise was popping like in a big way in those early '90s when sports teams started going with all those alt colors and they switched from that like hard blue to turquoise and everything. The vest, the baseball uniforms, they had like the vest and everything too. He was just so cool.
Ian, you are right. He was born in Pennsylvania, but then he moved to Cincinnati when he was six because his dad was on the Reds.
His dad played there, right?
He went to high school there and
It's so funny that you might like the uniforms. And again, to bring it back to sneakers is like, we have issues with big men like having a signature shoe. Imagine being so good and so cool that you can make a baseball signature shoe work.
And work. And that, like, that's still popping. Like, you can still get swingman. Is it swingman's? I have a pair of Griffey's. He like, his shoes were rad. When we did an AFE sneaker one, David Borey took Griffey's. That's one of his five favorite shoes. Yeah. Like all time. Like, that's how like iconic they are. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine a baseball player having a sneaker right now?
I mean, that like, it's like
Mookie might have a chance, but still, he would have to do even so much more.
Well, and like,
so much more.
We hear so much about Mike Trout. It's like, for a second I thought about putting Mike Trout on here, but I was like, he's not a superstar.
Well,
like,
and he has a shoe. He has a trainer.
And he's
that
like, the,
everyone's like, no,
the best. No. And Anaheim is obviously a small market. But it's, you know, I think of it sort of as like a Los Angeles distant suburb, but it's like, you have to be real star power to be famous in the country when you are in a tiny place.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he did.
And it's not like Ken Griffey Jr. was like a big personality. He's not Deion Sanders. He's like a pretty quiet dude. Like, the way he played baseball was just so cool. And his swing so iconic that it fucking transcended. He was so cool. What a great pick.
Okay, I got a baseball player. People will be happy. Okay, let's take a quick break and then we'll be back with our number two picks.
All right, and now we're back and we're on to our second picks. Ian, what do you got?
I'm going to go to baseball now. And this is somebody I never watched play. They lived their entire lives before my time. But it's someone growing up as a baseball fan, like someone who I always had, like, was taught by like my dad to have like massive respect for. Even my dad was like a Yankee fan, which obviously the least of the small market things growing up. But this guy was not a Yankee player. He was a Pittsburgh Pirate, 15-time All-Star, 2-time World Series champion, 1-time MVP, 1-time World Series MVP, 12-time Gold Glove Award winner. Played his entire career in the city of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, which is a small market. Mm-hmm. Roberto Clemente.
Great.
Just one of the greatest baseball players of all time. And then also just like one of, I mean, two amazing things, charge the mound in a fun way, like an absolute hothead on the field. But then also just like one of the best dudes
yeah.
to ever play baseball, died doing charity work, I think in Nicaragua.
Wow.
In a plane crash at the age of 38 years old. Plane crash. There had been a massive earthquake in Nicaragua.
Wow.
And his plane was like flying there, delivering aid, food, medical supplies, all that stuff to Nicaragua. And he was on the plane, like flying the stuff there when it went down. And that's how his life was cut short. And up until Roberto Clemente, the Hall of Fame, you had to have a 5-year gap between when you yeah. stopped playing baseball and when you got into the Hall of Fame. And when he died, they were just like, nope, next year. He's yeah. in the Hall of Fame. They put him in there. And just like one of the greatest small market athletes of all time, won the World Series twice in the city of Pittsburgh, you know, which is a city that's definitely used to winning championships and stuff like that. And I didn't like, I guess I don't think of the Steelers as a small market team, but I definitely think of the Pirates as a small market team.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And just the way, again, I think he was, and just from what I've heard, it's like he's good enough to where he could have gone somewhere else. It wasn't like,
yeah.
you know, and being a pro athlete in Pittsburgh, it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. Yeah. You know, and you won there and you still stayed.
And stayed there for his entire career until he was 38 and his career and life were cut short. Like, and to be, I mean, this was, his last game was in 1972. His first All-Star game was in 1960. And to be a very dark-skinned, like, Latin American athlete, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? In, like,
Pittsburgh.
In a small town like that, ooh. In Pittsburgh, like, couldn't have been easy, no. you know? So he did all that. You know, despite that pressure and everything, and like this made the city fall in love with him and the league fall in love with him to where now, like if you win a Roberto Clemente award, that's like the man of the year. That's
yeah.
Like
it's the Walter Payton.
It's the Walter Payton award. Yeah. Right. Exactly. So I just had to tip the cap. No pun intended yeah. to Roberto Clemente and one of the great baseball replete with amazing small market players. Ken Griffey Jr. Of course, maybe the greatest, but like, Roberto Clemente, definitely on that Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, that's a great pick. Thank all right. I was like,
because I had someone on my list who I will honorable mention, but they have their personal life is so bad that I like didn't. So I was like, they were my number one. And then I took them off the list because I was like, dog, you are the greatest, but like you really fucked up a lot of things.
We could have a round of just like,
yeah,
just,
bad.
Let's ignore their personal lives.
Yeah, for sure. CJ, you want to go next?
So, okay. I'm going to do a football player. And this is probably the most iconic running back. The sad thing about this guy is like whenever we talk about him, they're like, man, his franchise really robbed him of some very prime years.
Yeah, that's what sucks.
None other than Barry Sanders of the Detroit Lions. Yeah, just he probably is one of the most iconic running backs. A guy who and we talk about the difficulty of like why the NFL and baseball and some of these other sports don't really pop on social is because all the highlights sort of look the same. Like you can be an incredible player, but what is that individual? What is that like incredible thing that you can show in a single clip? Barry Sanders was that in the 80s and 90s. And yeah, it's like, as when I was a young kid, it was like, I didn't watch full football games, but I did watch Barry Sanders. Like I was you know, it was like watching a superhuman play sports.
Like a video game.
Yeah, it was a video
player.
Yeah. He moved sideways just as well as he moved forwards, and he moved backwards even better than those two. He was like, he was insane to watch play football.
Yeah.
And he retired earlier than people thought.
Well, he played 9 years or something like that, but
for a running back now. You look at Todd Gurley, he's gone. I mean, running backs have, sadly, it's not fair. I don't like it. They have 4 years max, kind of, because of the beating they take. And you also get slower as you get older, and you can only bulk up and keep your speed. It's probably the most turnover of any position in sports because it's just so hard.
It's so hard.
So 9 years on the body. That seems so short to us now, but that's how good he was that even at year 10, he would have been good.
he was still good. Running backs played longer in those days. And yeah. I think it's maybe because every defensive end wasn't 315 pounds, right. But ran like a 4.6.
Yeah. Right.
Like, but him, you had Jerome Bettis played like a long time. Both of those guys also you had who played in a unique way. Like you had, I'm not saying that's not true now. There's definitely a diversity of running backs. You know what I mean? When Le'Veon Bell was popping, he played different than a Todd Gurley played and everything. But like, Barry Sanders was like a water bug and was like darting all over the field. And like, you would see him, he'd be here. And then all of a sudden he's behind the left tackle. And then all of a sudden he's up here, like juking the inside linebacker. And then you had Jerome Bettis, who was just like, like that. Just like such different people who played football in such different ways. And that like amount of personality on the field was so intoxicating and alluring and everything and made people start. He was, CJ, you just worked for House of Highlights. He would turn any house into it. Like we had VHS tapes at my house, me and like my older brother, that you would pop in. And it was just like, here is literally 30 minutes of just Barry Sanders' best runs. And you would just sit there and watch all of them.
Yeah. You don't need any context. Like they could have lost those games by 40, but you're like, Barry Sanders is my favorite football player.
And often did.
Why do the Lions play on Thanksgiving? I know it's history, but is it because the Bears don't?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
That's a great question.
Because, you hear talk, especially around this time of year, like,
yeah, like the Knicks got Christmas games for way too long.
And the Cowboys are quote unquote America's team. But it's like, I would prefer for someone who would like to get drunk and not talk to my family a ton to just put the best game on of whatever that week is. And
Thanksgiving's going to be so depressing this year for football.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be Detroit and it's going to be Dallas.
They had to give us a third game because, they started that like 10 years ago because they were like, or maybe even longer because they were like, okay, well, the Lions are never going to live up to this prime time. The Cowboys seem, and so they were just like, listen, we'll give you a good third game, but we're going to keep these stinkers here.
I don't think Detroit has ever been like in a amazing football team either. It's not like I don't think like in the 60s they were like putting numbers up or something like that.
Is it because they gave us cars? Like is that the deal?
Just trying to think of the American cities?
Detroit, Dallas.
Ford. Yeah.
I mean, that's what I was going to say too, is like, you would think they would have learned the lesson with Barry Sanders. Like, you have a guy like that, let's surround him. Let's go out of our way. Let's spend all the money we have. But then they did it again with Calvin Johnson.
They did it again.
I think there's people that would say they kind of did it to Matt Stafford, too. Like, that he is better than the team around him is.
He's got a cannon. Absolutely. God, that was always the talk back, like, in the 90s when it was, like, Emmitt Smith or Barry Sanders. Those were the two running backs the two best running backs in the NFL. And Emmitt Smith had Larry Allen and this, like, iconic offensive line in Dallas. And, like, he was a good running back, but he was also, I'm never going to not get 4 yards a rush. Because I'm running behind three Hall of Famers, what I mean? Like, and Barry Sanders, his offensive line was just like five dudes named Mike. You know what I mean? It was just like, it was never. And the argument was like, what if you put Barry Sanders behind like Dallas's offensive line? And we never got to see it. The guy just took a lick, and he's one of those dudes. Like, hopefully, not to like be a downer, but like, you don't see Barry Sanders a lot anymore. And like, hopefully, he can walk okay. You know what I mean? Like, hopefully, it's not one of those Earl Campbell situations. Yeah. But he also stopped early. So probably he can walk okay and is like living a happy life.
He was ahead of his time.
I think his son plays, by the way.
Okay. Yeah. My turn.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. This is my baseball or this is my basketball pick.
Yes.
A white man. Oh, boy. John Stockton.
Yeah. I love John Stockton.
He was there whole time. He said, I'll post up with these Mormons. I don't care. The antithesis of ring chasing. I mean, because I think he was like, we can get a ring here. But he also like defied what a basketball player should look like to me. Like it's like the reverse of what's happening with Kamala now. You like see John Stockton and you're like, I guess my brother can be in the NBA. Like, anything's possible. But how many 19 seasons in Utah? Yes. Never won it all, was on the dream team, did get a gold medal. It was named one of the 50 best NBA players of all time, considered one of the greatest point guards, is high up on the list and assists, steals. I think maybe, he holds the record. Yeah, by a wide margin in assists and steals. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, his friend who is on the team, who I'm not going to mention.
We're not into him.
I am disappointed.
He could go into that round.
Yeah, he's in that round for sure. I am disappointed for John. And then who was the other white guy? I saw him in an elevator once, and he just looked so regular. I loved it.
Yeah.
I am sad for them that they did never win at all. That was a fun team. They were like cool. I liked them. They had fun uniforms. You don't take them on as an enemy because you're like, okay. I saw Book of Mormon. I'm good. I mean, even his pictures, it's just so wild.
He looks like your friend's dad.
Yeah.
So much. He looked like your friend's dad from the second he started playing basketball, too. Like, even young John, even like early 90s John Stockton looked like a 38-year-old branch manager of a U.S. bank. Like, he never didn't look like that. That Karl Malone John Stockton pick and roll was
insane.
Deadly. They just dominated. I mean, not dominated, but like we're one of the best teams in the West for more than a decade. Just doing that the whole time.
Yeah.
Also, speaking of like the white privilege of being an NBA player is like everybody was like John Stockton did it the right way. You know, like
it's like what does that even?
When you shake his hand, it stays shook. And by all accounts, like when you talk to people who played with him, one of the dirtiest players like of all time. Like throwing little elbows, trying to trip people, like. Was out there like was the player Bruce? What people think Bruce Bowen was, John Stockton really was. just like filthy, you know what I mean? And nobody talks about him like that, which is
looks
like he manages a bank.
In his Wikipedia, it is noted that he is a devout Roman Catholic.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, a Gonzaga player.
Is he like the first? I mean, because we think of Gonzaga as such a like powerhouse now, but I can't imagine in like the 80s it was.
I don't think it was. I think he was maybe one of the first dudes to really like put Gonzaga on the map. Yeah. I think he's from Spokane. He's from that area.
Yeah. 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 So that makes sense for him. So, I mean, he helped put like a whole basketball powerhouse on the map in some ways, too.
I wish Adam Morrison.
We owe him for
out.
Adam Day and Matt Adam Morrison. Yeah, Austin Day. Yeah.
That was just our excuse to start naming those guys. I mean, another thing too of like, it's so funny because John Stockton, you're like, you see a lot of those like evolution of players. So it's like you see the fashion sort of evolution from like long short to short. It was the same. The only thing that changed was that those last few years where they went to like the mountain uniforms. But it's like. Yeah. Same shoes. He was still wearing like Asics or New Balances, like thick white socks and short shorts and same haircut, like timeless.
Same dude, same old G. Same. I feel like you could drop John Stockton into this NBA and he'd still be like,
he'd figure it out.
Oh yeah. Him and Hero would be like, you want a room together?
Hero would be like, this white guy. It's like, you're a white kid.
As he's shaving lines into his eyebrows. Okay, let's take a quick break and then we'll be back with our number one pick. Okay, we are back. Ian, you are our guest of honor, so you'll be going last.
Big finale.
And then, so CJ, you're up
first. Oh yeah, I guess. Okay. So mine's actually kind of boring, but it's just we know everything about him. Tim Duncan, San Antonio Spurs.
That was going to be my first, too.
Oh, shit. Okay. Well, then feel free to pile on. Yeah. So, I mean, Tim Duncan, 5-time NBA champion. And I think, like, his playing style and his demeanor is actually very, like, small market in a way. That's why he's, like, number one to me. Just, like, low-key, understated, let his game speak for himself, let his work ethic speak for itself. And just the loyalty there is like, he could have, I think they've talked about him maybe going other places, but just stayed there and won these championships with a few different iterations of the team, which again, I just want to speak to his loyalty. It was like, it'll come around, like we're the Spurs, this is what we are. And won it with a few different superstars in his time.
There was a time when he was rumored to be going to Orlando.
Yeah.
I think it was 19... Or no, it couldn't have been 90. He came into the league in 98. But there was a rumor he was going to Orlando. Mm-hmm. Never happened. 15 All-Star game teams, all from San Antonio. And like you said, just the definite, you acted small market. His game was small market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was boring. 5-time NBA champion. 10-time anime champion. The dude is like, just like didn't give a fuck, man. Just loved winning at basketball. Like his picture accepting the MVP trophy is so funny.
Yeah.
Just the way he's dressed and everything.
It's almost interesting to imagine him in a Chicago, New York, even Houston. Like San Antonio is small market. Houston is not, just because of the size of it, you know, it's the fourth largest city in the country. But like, would he have been as successful there, or would he have, like, it's almost because that whole team, I mean, I think of Robinson as pretty quiet too.
Yeah.
Not, at least not flashy, just kind of like,
that's what was so perfect. It was like the Spurs were waiting for the player to really like cement that that's what their persona is for years to come.
Yeah. I mean, a team that like, who's, David Robinson's probably the second best player, but their third best player is George Gervin of all time, maybe, right? Unless you want to throw like Manu in there, which you very well could.
I think Kawhi, Kawhi, he even just has a little snippet, but.
But it's a team whose like identity was started by one of the flashiest players in the history of the NBA, you know, like the Iceman. But like, he's that team. He will, they will forever be, it would be weird if they ever had a flashy player. Because like that identity is so locked into who like Tim Duncan was and is that like, his personality defined like a city. If I meet someone from San Antonio, I expect for them to be like laid back just because of this dude from the Virgin Islands.
And they're not. They're not sometimes, you know, because like they get mad
they're
at
not,
Pop.
No.
Like, I think of Pop as like, you know, a coach who started Let's Being Outspoken on behalf of our players. And there's Spurs fans that are like, fuck Pop. I love him as a coach, but I hate him as a person. I'm like, I think him as a person is like only what extends his legend status.
He's one of the great. You could pick him in here too. He's like just such an interesting dude.
Yeah. Do you have any honorable mentions?
No, I don't want to take any off.
Okay. Yeah. I have a lot of honorable mentions, but I do think there are ones that no one else would pick. Larry Fitzgerald. I mean,
oh, Fitz. Absolutely. Still doing it.
Doing it. I love him. I just like, I just think he's the best. And I think he like exemplifies athletes and what it means. Has been at the same place, has not chased a ring. Just awesome. So this was who was
small market college player too. Went to Pitt, which is like a small market college team. Yeah.
And then does University of Phoenix commercials, you know, so still giving it back. This was my person who was going to be on the list, but then for his issues off the field is not Jim Brown. Albert Pujols. I'm saying it wrong, but he just is St. Louis to me. Reggie is not on my list, but is here. I love him. Edgerrin James, I think, belongs on that list. He is the opposite of what Indianapolis would have ever wanted. And then he made the city love him. Like,
were people mad? What was the story with it?
They were never mad. It wasn't
not
like
the Gailey family.
No. But it was just like, okay. That sort of felt the vibe. I mean, he had gold teeth. And that was like Indy wanted the Pacers to draft Steve Alford. Okay, so it's corn-fed, you know, hillbillies that see University of Miami gold teeth, dreadlocked running back and are clutching their pearls a bit.
Yeah.
But he was the fucking best. Gold teeth, the gold jacket. I love him. And then Marshall Faulk and Kurt Warner.
Yes.
Marshall played in Indianapolis, then went to St. Louis. Kurt Warner is St. Louis. So my number one pick is Peyton Manning.
It has to be.
I know what Indy was like before Peyton, and I know what it was like during Peyton, and I know what it's been like after Peyton, and the city completely changed. We don't get that new stadium, which means we don't host a Super Bowl, which is billions of dollars of economic windfall to a city that would not have it otherwise. He built There's a children's hospital in his name. He really put Indianapolis and the Colts on the map. And then when he left, he went to another small market and won them a championship there. So he's won championships in two small markets in two different times. And I can't even, and I feel this way with LeBron in Cleveland. I can't imagine the economic issues Indy would have if they had not had Peyton for those 13 years.
Earnestly, like an economy unto himself, almost like a big market unto himself. You know what I mean? Like,
he's the most famous player ever. in Indy ever.
Yeah. Great SNL host. Great SportsCenter commercials.
Great ESPY host. Like
great ESPY host.
He is a celebrity. I did. Yeah, David Borey and I did. He is, he's a celebrity, and we just, like, in Indy, Reggie was so beloved, and he was notorious, but Peyton, it's like, that is, that he was the most famous quarterback at a time.
I was always a Peyton guy over Brady. I never really liked the Peyton. I liked the Patriots the one time, that first Super Bowl when they beat, like, the Rams, and they all came out as a team, because how can you not resist that? But, like, I was, when there was the quarterback wars, I was always a Peyton guy. Mm-hmm. There was just something about him that I just fucking liked.
I feel so lucky that, because like with Eli, he went to a small market and then his dad said no. And then he went to the biggest market. And I'm like, I'm glad that Archie let Peyton stay in Indy and wasn't like, no, you're going to go to the 49ers. Or, you know,
Why did he? Was it because the Colts were just such an iconic franchise?
I think he trusted the Ursays, and the head coach at the time was, gosh, I can't remember, but I think he just was like, this is a solid organization, and he saw the Chargers as having lots of issues.
And he was right. Yeah.
I mean, I do think he put Eli in a much tougher situation, even though trying to save him. It's like, send them to the most evil fucking market. I mean, just the media wise, the scrutiny that you come under as
the second
as
son,
a giant. Yeah. It was like, I'd be pissed if that was my dad.
He's already the younger brother of like, who's Peyton was like, you know, he threw a lot of picks that first season, but firmly established as like, oh, he's got next. This is the next quarterback.
He went 3-13, but it was it was like a belief of like, we're lucky. He even came here to give us that.
It's the Justin Herbert energy times 10 right now. Like, but then like Eli had to come in as the younger brother, and it's like, oh, by the way, now you play in New York City.
Yeah.
And the team that's on the team that's been good in New York City. It's not like you're going to the Jets where it's like, if you win 8 games a season,
they'll be happy.
You're
the
best quarterback they've ever had. He's, one of the greatest small market athletes ever. Absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. So number one pick, Peyton Manning from Megan. All right, Ian, bring us home. What is your number one pick for greatest small market athlete?
So I'm going to mention my would have picked him, but not for recent events and his personality. Also, not so recent events and his personality. Brett Favre.
Yeah. I mean, I see him. CJ wrote him down, but did not say him.
The Trump thing was awful.
It was a bummer.
The behavior with Jen Sturger is absolutely inexplicable and unexcusable and just like awful. She's a lovely person, and that was so unfair that he did that. But all that aside, text under that is just the most exciting football player to watch in the 90s. Yeah. Just like, oh my God, the way he played football was fucking ridiculous.
It's the smallest market too. It is the actual population, everything. It's the smallest.
The smallest market. It's insane that they have a football team. Yes. And part of the reason they still, I mean, I don't think they would have left if Favre wasn't there, but like, so fun.
The city is the stadium.
That's it, right?
You know,
It's like it's up there with like going to a World Series game. Like I just want to go to Lambeau. I think I worked with James Jones, who's a wide receiver, and I would just ask him questions all the time. And he was like, the thing you don't know about the Lambeau Leap is people dump beer on you and then you're just drenched in beer for 2 more hours. I'm like, yeah, I guess that does suck. But yeah, I mean, all the riding the bikes to the training camp. My sister-in-law is a Packers fan, and they're a very easy organization and team to root for.
Absolutely. Even to this day, I always like, if the Packers are playing a team I don't care about, I'm going to root for the Packers.
Yes.
And you could also put Aaron Rodgers in this position.
Absolutely.
But, you know, Aaron Rodgers seems like a great dude. Brett Favre, kind of a schmuck. I have to, and this was always coming, I couldn't let this podcast go by without picking a man who has been small market his entire life. He wears the number O. He wears the letter O on his jersey. He played basketball in Oakland, landed the point guards, and then ignored by major college scouts, took his talents to Weber State, which is in Utah, which is a small market state.
Yeah.
Played there for 4 years, entered the NBA draft, where he promptly made rookie, all rookie first team, while winning rookie of the year for the Portland Trail Blazers, a 5-time All-Star, a man who has been an All-NBA second and third team and first team once, 2017-18, a man who, in my opinion, the Portland Trail Blazers are a true small market team. Mm-hmm. Up until we got the Timbers, the only game in town, and like, it's kind of, listen, no offense to the Timbers.
It's a different
Portland
vibe.
Fucking loves the Timbers, but it's kind of different. Mm-hmm. Nobody in like, and no casual sports fans are checking for Timbers scores. The Blazers are like a true, true, true one horse town, small market like team. And in my opinion, in the last year, he has become, even though he's never taken us to the finals or won a championship, and Bill Walton won us the championship, Clyde Drexler took us to the finals, Brandon Roy was electric before his knees gave out. But I think Damian Lillard is the greatest Portland Trailblazer of all time.
Oh, I really think that
he has given us more moments. Listen, winning the championship in 1977, fucking amazing. You know what I mean? And I hope we get to get to experience that one day. But like, no one has given Blazers fans more moments. Like when you're a fan of a small market team and you're like a diehard like that, you have to like have your own little championships in moments. Mm-hmm. You have to let him hitting that dagger over Paul George, waving bye-bye, and then like mean mugging the camera. You have to let that be a championship for you. Even if you know in your heart you're about to go to the next round and get like knocked out of the playoffs.
Right.
You have to let Damian Lillard scoring 61 points or winning that game, that first game against the Lakers in the bubble. You have to start, like, you have to get all, like, the food is going bad. Your refrigerator is unplugged. The power is out. You got to fucking eat all that shit or it's going to go bad. You have to let that be like a little championship. You have to let that shot over Chandler Parsons' arm, lacrosse stick arm, be your championship.
Yeah.
When he beat Houston with 0.9 seconds left on the clock. Like, you have to soak all that up. And Damian Lillard has given us more of those mini moments of ecstasy and joy. I was in the arena when he hit that shot over Houston, and it was louder in the concourse than I have ever heard it be in the arena any other time I've watched basketball. And how loud it was in the arena, I can't even remember, because I was like in a state of ecstasy and bliss that entire time. And like, for someone who's like so fucking loyal to Portland, like, I think, you know what? He might finish his career somewhere else. He might. And I would never hold it against him. Like, at this point, even if he comes to LA and finishes his career, like with the Lakers, I would never hold it against him, because like, he has given us every fucking like drop.
Yeah.
He's given us like everything he's got. He stayed. He loves Portland. He loves CJ McCollum. They're great friends. Nurk is like his baby's godfather. Like, they're like, he loves that team, and he's like embraced the city. I remember there's a story from one of the bridge towns. It must have been 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah.
But like, some of the volunteers had like bought a bunch of pizzas that they were going to bring to an after party. And so it was a ton of them, you know what I mean? It was several trips. And they heard a voice that was like, hey, let me help you out with that.
No.
And then like, they followed them to the car with pizzas, and they turned around, and it was Damian Lillard with like, holding like 15 pizza boxes that he helped him into the car with. And then he like took off because he was shopping at this like menswear store that's like next door. Just like, I'm like,
why wasn't I at that Bridgetown?
I wish I was at that. I can't believe I wasn't at that pizza place, to be honest. But like, he's that dude. And like, he means, and everyone who plays with him comes away like a better basketball player and a better person. He like will still congratulate Myers Leonard on Twitter and shit like that. You know what I mean? Like a guy who came into the league with him, like just a great dude. And I feel so truly fortunate to have been able to like, I've been able to root for Brandon Roy, Rasheed Wallace, mm-hmm. and growing up Clyde Drexler. Like, and I can't believe my luck that I now get to root for Damian Lillard. And he's my favorite small market athlete.
That's great. No, I mean, as a person who I love the Lakers now, and it's merely because of LeBron. And that rumor keeps coming up where it's like, maybe they can convince Dame to come with California Connection and all that. And to me, I don't even know if I'd celebrate that. Like,
I know it would be sad.
It just is like a mythology that he has built that it a Damian Lillard not Blazers jersey would fucking make my brain bleed.
Well, because we want him. You've made a very strong case that you want him to win one. Yes. And if he's going to win one, you want it to be in Portland.
Because, yeah, it's
LeBron and the Cavs. It's the same way of like a net. And then he left, and every Cavs fan I know felt very differently about him going to the Lakers than they did about him going to the Heat. It's like, you gave it to us. Thank you so much. And I also think you made a strong case too, and I'm biased, but I think being a small market fan is more fun because you do end up celebrating those tiny victories. Like I think about the 8 points all the time. We didn't win, but they made a documentary about it. And and I watched that, and the Colts don't always win, but I miss Andrew Luck, but I love that we had Andrew Luck. And I love that when I meet people, they go, "You're the first Colts fan I've ever met." And I'm like, because we don't leave, but now I'm out here and I'll tell you everything you'd never even wanted to know. Like our passion, we're less cynical. And we're less pessimistic because we're just happy to be in the game at all.
Yeah, it's a true, there's a true joy. There's a like true joy to it that I wouldn't trade for the world. Like I love it. So, and I don't, it unites that being from, it's the thing that makes Portland, Portland, which is a city that like is stratified in big ways. You know what I mean? Like they're like, there's the Portlandia portrayal of Portland, which is true, which is 100% true. But in addition to that, it's like a very real city. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's also this places where there's like Radio Shacks and there's like areas, you know what I mean, that are like super poor and that you can't get brunch and all that shit. And like, and there's like super conservative parts, you know what I mean? And stuff like that. And the one thing that everyone has in common is like when the Blazers are playing, we're watching the Blazers, you know? And that's just like a really beautiful feeling. It makes me, especially having left, like when I get to go to the Staples Center to play, to watch the Blazers play the Clippers or the Lakers, you know what I mean? I'm immediately best friends with anyone who's wearing like the pink, you know, like immediately. And that's like, it's a real special feeling. It's kind of a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
No, I mean like the Blazers fan community, like I've been recently accepted by the Lakers fan community. Yeah. And when people are like, Lakers fans are pretty awful, I'm like, no way. And then I'll read Twitter a little bit and I'll be like, oh yeah, that person's pretty rough. But I have zero issues with Blazers fans. And I'm like, so like shout out Portland and the Blazers. Yeah. I mean like people, I remember on Twitter a few months ago, right before the Lakers Blazers series, people were trying to pit you and I against each other. I'm like, first of all, no. We're like friends in real life, but it's like, why? Like, this is great that we get to watch this. And it'd be dumb for me to be like, no, I love the Lakers so much. So Blazers suck. And Dame, I was like, I'm robbing myself as a basketball fan to deny Dame Lillard.
I even found myself like, even like, I love LeBron so much. Like up until he became a Laker, I was like a hard LeBron, like a stan. You know what I mean? I fucking love the dude. I love those Miami teams, even when people hated him. And when we went to Cleveland, forget about it. Even on the Lakers, a team I sports hate, which of course is not real hate, but like it's fun. It's like puppies fighting, but like a team I sports hate with such a deep, deep burning fire. Mm-hmm. Watching Shaq's face and his two outstretched arms and fingers after that fucking alley-oop from Kobe, after we gave up a 16 or 14 point lead in the fourth quarter. Like I sports hate them so much, but even that, I'm going to let myself enjoy watching LeBron James run down the court and catch a lob. You know what I mean? You cannot. It's like, it's fucking crazy. Also, let me say this about Lakers fans. Listen, of course, because they are truly a global team, like a global team, like only maybe the Yankees and maybe the Cowboys are in like America. Like, of course, they're going to have a lot of scumbag fans and like shitheads, especially on Twitter, which is like, let me amplify these shitheads. But like also like the Twitter community of like Lakers fans of like, Darius Soriano, and is that his first name?
Yes.
Right?
I believe so.
Yeah. And like, Kendru, what's his name? And like you,
there's a lot of great people. Harrison Fagan, who like writes for the
Fagan. Yeah. There's like so many like truly amazing Laker fans. And this isn't the first time this has been said. I'm parroting something someone else says. They're like, those are real basketball fans. The stereotype of like the LA sports fan showing up halfway into the first quarter and leaving halfway into the fourth quarter. That's not true. Mm-mm.
And like, I don't think it's true of Dodgers fans. Are there Dodgers fans? Yeah, but there's also Dodgers fans that are like a five-person family that brought in a cooler. And it's like, that's a way more intense fan than I've ever seen at a Colts or Pacers game. For sure.
Those fans, they're fucking for this generation, you know? And like Lakers fans are fucking, they know their shit because they've gotten to watch really good basketball. Yeah. They got like people grew up watching Magic. Of course they have an appreciation for the sport of basketball. You know what I mean? Like they grew up watching Kobe Bryant play basketball. They like have seen good shit. They they're like families who grew up getting taken to museums and shit like that. You know what I mean? But like with basketball, they have like a higher appreciation for the sport. Like, and as a Blazer fan, I know that's controversial, but they are good fans. Laker fans are good fucking fans. Clipper fans can take a fucking hike. The Laker fans are good.
All right. Well, Ian, thank you so much. Let's end on that. And I'm only going to clip that part and post it on Twitter. But no,
great. Except Paul Scheer and Payman Benz is awesome. Yeah.
But dude, no, thank you so much for doing the show. We know, we're like, we wanted to celebrate all day. Like to do any of our duties, especially on a weekend, we really appreciate your time.
Absolutely. I mean, this is just a continuation of the celebration. Yeah. This was such a great time. It's Thank you for having me.
And I think what we learned today, please don't let the small market die.
Yeah.
Especially basketball. We will reward you. We will love you. Just give us a shot. Okay.
We need it. Hopefully the Timberwolves will draft some. Not that Minneapolis is a small market, but for basketball, it feels like it.
Maybe I think so.
Timberwolves take Anthony Edwards. Let's be a 10-time All-Star.
Yeah, I would love that. Ian, where can people find you?
Oh, I'm at Ian Carmel across platform, Instagram, Twitter. Watch the Late Late Show with James Corden, where I am like a less funny Andy Richter on our show now, which is a lot of fun. And listen to All Fantasy Everything, where we pick a different topic every week and fantasy drafted as a flimsy excuse for us to tell stories about when we were drunk and embarrassing.
Perfect. I love that. The latest All Fantasy Everything I was on was Movie Houses.
Movie Houses.
And I loved it. That was the week that we were talking about this before. I was having a very bad, tough, mentally not good things happening. And I was like, no, I'm going to do the podcast anyways. And it was a bright spot in a tough week for me. So
it's so nice to hear. Well, it's always a bright spot whenever you come by. And CJ, for God's sake, we have to fucking get you on already.
Yeah, no, I couldn't do it the one time you asked me. So we're going to figure that out.
We'll do it very soon. And it's going to be a lot of fun. And God, this was such a blast. Thank you so much for having
me. Awesome.
Thank you. You can find me at Megan Gailey on Twitter, CJ at CJ Toledano. Rate, review, be kind, take care of yourself, still wear a mask. Mm-hmm.
Get out there and vote.
No, but listen, if you're in Georgia,
stay in line.
Get out there and vote. I told my parents today I don't want any presents. CJ, you already told me you got a present. I don't want any more presents. You just give all that money to Georgia and Black Votes Matter and Stacey Abrams, and I trust her to do with it what she will.
Okay. You know you still got to get our present.
I know.
No, I already have. It can't be returned. It cannot be returned.
All right, Ian, thank you so much. Bye, guys. We'll see you next week.
The Greatest is a production of iHeartRadio.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.